I said, Dad, I got a job, as you know, and I got a fellowship. He says, listen, you're old enough to make your own decisions. I promised you that I would support all my kids until they got a job, which I did. I'm glad I did it. I said, I want to go. I said, I'd like to take the fellowship. He said, well, of course, I'll help you out and support you. I went. Professor Sage says, fine. I said, how much you get? I said, $1,500. He says, $1,250 will get you the bridal suite on Aquitania. He was kidding. He knew what all that was about. Now, I had, for my master's thesis, the subject I wrote on was the Shutos and the Indian trade of the West. And it was agreed that I would write on the same topic for my PhD, but to improve it, that's why I'm going to Spain, on the Spanish period. Because they came over there in six. See, my thesis went from 1763 to 1852. But being a French extraction as well, I wanted to go to France. But there's another reason why I wanted to go to France. I felt that I had a duty as a native son to California to do something on California. And my predecessor, as the Native Sons Fellow, one of the two, was Lewis Leslie, who taught here.
He taught here, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for many years. And Lewis told me, he says, Abe, I said, I'd like to do the French and California something. He says, well, they wouldn't let me in. There isn't any. Like that. He said, I didn't get in the Foreign Office. I said, where in the hell do you think you're going to get any stuff on it? So I just let it go. Because Lewis is a good friend of mine. He and I entered the very same day on our graduate work, although he was graduated from Stanford, although he was older than I am, a year before and had taught in St. Louis for a year. And I've always been behind.
Is that something?
Always cleared up his mistakes. Mm-hmm. Now we know, but we didn't know it then.
What was he studying there in Europe, or researching?
I was on the Shutos, which is the Missouri, mm-hmm. and he was on the Upper Missouri. That was his thesis, and he went over there. He knew French very well, by the way. No Spanish.
Through Bolton's
guidance? Bolton's seminar. Oh, sure, yeah. sure. And he wanted to go over there. And he went over there, but he didn't find anything in Spain or in France. And he knew French well.
And they wouldn't let him in?
Well, he said he couldn't get in. I said, when the hell do you think you're going to get anything on that? That was the side point. Even in Spain, but don't say this because I've never wanted to say it. I've had a lot of arguments with Lewis, but we've been good friends. He went into the Spanish archives in Seville and said it's too cold to work. He showed up twice in 4 months.
Dear.
And when he came back, he changed his topic. He wrote, he got his degree finally on the beginning of railroads into San Diego. I had to clear up that mess. There's several others. I now know what the reason is. We didn't know it before. Lewis was a sickly boy, and we never knew it. And of Christian Science on top of it, that we knew. And I've always had a... He was a great lecturer, popular lecturer, for ladies' clubs. Oh, yes. And he's excellent. And he was a ladies' man. He met me when I came down here in the middle, and I slept in his room, and he got me my my first place when I came here.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Oh, no. He's a great boy. But he's a very funny and nervous kid there. He'd go out. He's more like a lady. Wants everything new into here, and after 2 years, he doesn't want anything that starts over again, mm-hmm. so on down the line. Even in his students, if he liked you, oh, you could never do any wrong. But God help you if you did. And secondly, all the A's and B's went to his favorites and not the others, but don't say that.
No.
I don't like to do it because he was a good friend of mine, although I've gotten in more battles with him than anybody else than the kind in there. Well, I get back into here. I picked out the French in California, largely because he said there wasn't anything, and because my old friends, Aton and Meacham, had written a little article on the French in California. And Chapman, one of my own teachers and so on, said that the French either never left any records or didn't give a damn about them. And no one knew anything about it. So I decided I'd look and see what's what, that's all. I wasn't sanguine as to what I'm going to get or anything of the kind. Now, most of from now on, you'll find in the Adventures of Scan that article. From here on is where I'm really beginning.
Okay.
But I'll review some of them for you into there. Now, I didn't know what an archive was. if you think I knew French, you're crazier than hell. I did know some Spanish. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I went. I stopped on my way because I knew of Mrs. Surrey, and she gave me my first indications of where to look on my topic. Because, you see, Louisiana, you see, was French just before the Spanish would come to my period. So I went to France for not only for the California part, but for my own thesis, mm-hmm. too. Oh, yes, I knew that. But I knew nothing else about it. And I got the French. I'll never forget it. I was on the Aquitania. And the Aquitania, which is a British ship, stopped at Cherbourg, which is not a deep sea point, and they had to get on a French tender to get into that. And remember, this is in 1924, when all the Frenchmen that had skipped out the war and made their money in the United States were now visiting their family there. Oh yeah, that caused a lot of trouble into there. And they were all getting off, and Americans, the rest of us getting on the tender, and the first thing I heard, he says, well, I'll be goddamn, they can't even speak English here. Which just struck me right in the face,
boy.
Right off the bat. And that was the first time I knew it. I agreed with them. No. Don't say I agreed with them in that, in many respects, but I didn't realize what it really meant, as I did later on. But yes, I did know what that meant, because when I got in there and I started to order in a restaurant and something like things into there, it was a good reason there. And I immediately then went over to the kosher restaurant, meet some of my Jews, which I rebelled against on my Yiddish. All my life, my father and mother talked to us in Yiddish. We answered in English. I rebelled. I studied Hebrew, but not Yiddish. But I don't mind telling that story. I tell it quite often. And that's, but you get words. And that's when I began to do it. So once in a while, every once in a while, a Yiddish word would come out in a lecture later on. And I'm a great advocate of learning Yiddish and Yiddish literature, although I don't know it myself. I read it into there. But I then had to get in and dig in my French.
Boy.
It's 18th century French. It's ignorant French. It's a hard thing. And because I've got Indians writing in what you call letter span, you know, sounds and so on.
Yeah.
Words in there. I have Spaniards writing poor French and Frenchmen writing poor Spanish.
And Indians
writing falls out
neither.
Phonetically. That's what
right,
I think phonetically into there. So that I became the greatest authority on 18th century ignorant French. and had a harder time reading a newspaper in modern French. And I still do, although I never trusted myself. That's why Dr. Brown and the rest of them, Leslie Brown, who just died, you know, gave me 4 hours a week for 25 years, going over that. Well, everything I did, I would never publish anything without at least having him check over my French. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, but I ignorant French, I'd get it more than get from the sound. Well, but I didn't know anything about it, so I finally had this permission. I went in and got it. I went over there, and I got a few things, not much. But I was told by Mrs. Suri to see a calendar of Mississippi Valley's materials over there, which had not been published, but yet it's published since. And that will give me an indication as to where to go for what I wanted. The notes were there. And that was the greatest thing I ever had, because at that time, Professor William Spence Robertson, one of the great leaders in Latin American history, was over in France, and so was Alvord, one of the leading Westerner professors over there. And he's an experienced man in archive work. He published lots and lots at the time. And he would never tell me to do this. He says, Master, did you do this? I said, no, I have to do that. Oh, yes, you'll have to get permission in order to get the Foreign Office. I said, well, that's what I want. So he would tell me that. Next week he'd say, Master, did you see this or do that? He was my greatest old man. I've loved that man ever since. He's dead now. A long way into there. But certainly I got into the Foreign Office. And that's where I did my first French on California. That's where I get it. I didn't find too much. I tried to argue with them that they must be in the French archives. They said, no, that's all there is, and it's only open to 1848 at that time. So I did what I could, and then went on to Spain. Of course, Spain, there's lots of things that happened in the meantime.
This was in
1925. I mixed up the stories between that year in there and the next year in my scholarship. I mixed the two together on purpose. I could separate some of them for you. I don't think it's necessary, though, maybe.
That, or I'm thinking maybe we could wait till the next session.
I think you better, because I want you to look over and see what I did.
Exactly.
Then I'll do it for you.
Then I could check some of the areas.
I jammed both of my years together for stories for them.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. Yeah.
All right, then why don't we bring it to a close for today.
Okay.
Today is November 4th, 1981, and the session is being held at the Malcolm Love Library in the San Diego History Research Center on the campus of San Diego State University. The interviewer is Alexander Liberski, graduate student representing the University Archives here on campus at the Research Center. The following interview is the second session with Dr. Abraham Nassetier. Dr. Nassetier, for this session, why don't we continue our discussion in your early years of some of your research. Last time we left off, right shortly after you'd gotten off of the ship and scouted around a little bit, maybe we can pick up about there.
Yes, when I was in France in there, which is my first experiences in both a foreign country and also in archival research. I had never been in an archive before that time. Some of the problems I think I mentioned before, but the most important thing here is that all we were allowed to consult in the Foreign Office archives were the diplomatic correspondence to 1848. What I wanted in particular were the consular records for the French consuls in California, which was my original idea of developing and translating and giving the story during the early years of California's history. But they said they did not have them, and what I got was simply the diplomatic correspondence with the mentions of California in them in many places, which I took notes on, and in a number of cases I found that the French ambassador or minister from the United States had received correspondence from the French consuls in California and had transmitted them to Paris, where I saw them. But that's the reason why I tried to argue with the head archivist that there must be some place in the archives, and I wanted to see him.
Do you know why they would have had reason to?
Yes, I'll explain that to you a little bit later.
All right.
Which I found out later. Or incidentally, I think I might interject here what happened later on. I simply took the notes on what was open to us and very carefully copied a few of the letters themselves and any other references. Of course, I picked up a few other items, naturally, in the Bibliothèque Nationale, where I worked also during this time, and more particularly in the Archive Nationale. The Archive Nationale, which is the basic archival repository of Paris, contained the materials on my major topic of research, on the Louisiana portions of my own PhD thesis topic. Naturally, I got what I could out of that, and it was there that Mrs. Surrey's advice and also the notations of the later Surrey guide or calendar to the materials and the French archives relating to the Mississippi Valley, and which I used and got invaluable material for my own dissertation. However, I then left after about, I should say it was the end of November, just before my birthday. I left France for Spain, which of course was my major objective on my first trip to Europe. Getting to Spain, I landed obviously first in Madrid, and in Madrid, where I had learned several things, I learned much more. While I was in Paris, when Professor Robertson told me of the important protocol that I get permission from the French Foreign Office to work in the French Foreign Office, which I did from our embassy, and hence I wrote in advance to the American Embassy in Madrid for permissions to use the Foreign Office archives in Madrid. Strange as it might seem, into there, when I got down to Spain, they had permission, so I ran over to the Foreign Office only to find out that they did have a sign and a department called Archives, but they had no materials. All the historical materials had long been sent over to the Archivo Histórico Nacional, which at that time was in the Biblioteca Nacional building. So I ran over to the National Historical Archives only to find out that I had to have permission.
More paper.
And the permission had to come by application of the American Embassy to the Foreign Office of Spain, and get permission to work in their archives. Well, I said, I have got to go to Seville, where my major repository is, and hence I would come back. In the meantime, I asked for the permissions that are required, and off I went to Seville. In Seville was the most peculiar place in the world. It's a delightful place. I was all alone. Of course, I had one experience before that I might relate. While I was in Madrid, I stayed at a pension, and while I was fairly conversant in Spanish, which I was getting back to my speaking vocabulary, but I was listening to several of the people who lived in the hotel, in the pension, speaking, and I could not make out their Spanish, so I called over the concierge, and he told me, "Oh, that is the language of Andalusia." And I picked up my hand and I says, "Well, I better learn that, because that's where I'm going to head for." And believe me, I learned it in a hurry, because the language of Andalusia is considerably different from the Castilian of Madrid, or of the better Castilian, which is spoken in north central Spain around Valladolid and so on, where even it's a pleasure to be, as I'll tell you later on.
Did you get a tutor at that point?
No, I just picked it
just
up.
Walked
just
in the
picked
streets.
It up into there. The chief differences are that the Andalusians bite off or slur off the endings of most of their verbs, have a slightly different pronunciation of a few of the letters of their alphabet, of which I'll illustrate it to you on my first night in Seville. When I came down to the breakfast room, to the dining room in my hotel, and I tried to explain very carefully in Spanish that I was a person who did not eat any meat or meat products. And they said surely to me that they would have tried to find out some of the things, and I asked them, "What do they have?" They said they have picao. Well, I searched my brains, and the only thing I could think of for picao was the word pecado, which means a sin, and I couldn't understand how that could be come into there. Finally, after I failed to get that, I simply asked the waitress to bring me in so I'd see it. And when they brought in fish, I said, "Oh, you mean pescado." And they gave a big roar, because they just, the way they say it in Spanish is they come on the pop, they eat up and chew up the words into that. But I got down into their ways very quickly. In Seville, where I had a great deal of work to do, we had a peculiar situation. The only offices in Spain that are open at 8 o'clock in the morning until 2 are the official archives in all three places in Spain, in Seville, in Madrid, and in Simancas. In Seville, they never opened before 9 in the morning, and they never failed to close before half past one, quarter to two, into there, which made it unusual for us. And then during this first series, where they have only a few guides, and we have to search into general fear period, so we went after names, dates, regions, and things like that, where I got a pile of material. It's a nice place, I suppose, to work, except there is, it's in an old home, not a home, it's an old building built for the old Casa de Contratación of the 16th century. Has no heating facilities and no lighting facilities in it. So I used to beat the game simply by being the first one there in the morning, grabbing a couple of cork, little pieces of cork that we put on the cement floor so the feet wouldn't go through, dressed in an overcoat and in our gloves, we worked during that time. I always got in good with the portreros, that is, those are the boys who went out to get the ark, the bundles into which they are. And I always used to go out and talk to them so that I could always have some favors of getting more on reserve, which is against the law, but we did that. And by a judicious distribution of tobacco, which they loved during the time. But that also created problems because they used to smoke in the archives until one day, about, I don't think I was in Seville more than 6 weeks, when a fire broke out. One of the porteros had flipped the cigarette, began to fire, and they couldn't do anything about it. They called the fire department, but since this was on the second story, they didn't know what to do, so my colleague, old Tolliver, whom I'll never forget in there, he's the one that grabbed the hose and ran into it and became a great hero in Seville and gotten the papers and everything else into there, but they burned a number of volumes, and since that time they have not allowed any smoking inside. But since the portreros always liked to smoke, they used to go downstairs and outside to smoke, so we always had to wait hours in between. That's where my use of tobacco was. They'd bring a couple on reserve behind the flag, and then so I wouldn't have to go and search for it every time or lose all the time. But we always had time. There were no really rules of anything there. I hired a couple. They had a couple of copyists. They had no foreigners there. We had no, well, they did have photostatting, but it was very expensive.
Oh, imagine.
In there. Most of it was done by copyists, and they had five or six copyists whom we hired and paid, and they were good. They
Who were good. You working with at the time?
What do you mean?
Well, you said we were...
Oh, I mean any of the Americans who were working in there.
How many would... were there people you got to know?
Oh, yes. I got to know several of them, among whom, for example... Tolliver was the second Native Son Fellow, because the University of California always sent two. And he was an old Texan, a good friend of mine, and all the way through. He's the one that that began to teach us the Spanish customs quickly. He's a romantic Texan, into that. And we learned the ropes. The old common thing is known, because here you had a very ignorant southern Spain, Andalusia, which is the 8 southern provinces of Spain. It's agricultural in part. It is ignorant, probably 98-99% ignorant into their Catholic and religious to the thing, and therefore you don't play around. For that purpose, you could go to certain streets, and if you miss one house, not being right, the second one is sure to be it, so don't worry about it, because there was anybody could get anything you want to at any time, except a meal on the outside, away from their hotel, because They only had one restaurant in town that was ever served. They had cafes that we used to go to, and I'll tell you something about that in a minute. But the old adage, you couldn't go up to a girl. And if any girl was found on the streets unaccompanied of Seville, she was out for business. And there's no questions about it into there, unless you were doing. Then, you see, they used to go down and stroll in the streets, and they would sing to their girlfriends on the balconies, which is just exactly, oh, a foot or two higher than you would normally jump. That's about all. Did you come into it? And my colleague, Oliver, he was getting